Hello, friends. Welcome back to the second hour of Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr. We're broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington on 1150 AM. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in the Seattle area and beyond. We will have only the best psychics and astrologers in the world in our program, and I guarantee it will be the most interesting radio program you have ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. Again, guten Abend, good evening to my friends in Switzerland. And before I start, I'd like to repeat what I asked during the first hour to ask all of my listeners here in the United States, Canada, and in Europe to send good thoughts and good wishes to my friend Susan Miller in New York. She's one of the world's best astrologists. She was on my program several weeks ago, and she hasn't been feeling well. And I know that your prayers and good wishes would help her feel much better. Jeffrey, good afternoon. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you for having me on. I'm really excited.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Well, for my listeners, Jeffrey is a spiritual medium and researcher, paranormal investigator, one of the best, and award-winning author of Your Magical Soul. He's also the co-host of the internet radio talk show Explorers of Consciousness and is a member and past president of the Washington Ghost Society. He lives in the Seattle area with his wife and two cats, and he has published an amazing, incredible book entitled The Afterlife Interviews, Volume 1. And I think he's coming out soon with Volume 2 and...
Yeah, Volume 2 comes out on May 14th. Boy, that's an old bio because the radio show is no longer in existence.
Oh, no. Okay, well, well, I should have time traveled then and looked at it. Oh, well, I'm sorry.
Okay. Everything else is still there.
Oh, good. How about your two cats? How are they doing? That's an important question to ask.
They're doing very, very well. Yes, they're fat and happy.
Good, good. I'm getting a psychic message from your cats tonight. They want fresh mice and fish. So if you can do that for them, they will be happy with you. If not, you're going to get a lot of complaints.
Yeah.
Well, you know, listen, my friends, the Afterlife Interviews is an absolutely fascinating book, and I can't wait for the second volume. Could you tell my listeners, Jeffrey, how you got interested in this area? And I know you have a lot of incredibly interesting things to say, but how did you ever get interested in the life beyond this dimension?
Well, it kind of got thrust on me when I was about 3 years old, because my family lived in a very haunted house, and we only lived in the place for 8 months. But there was so much activity, and there was so much phenomena that we experienced that it just stuck with us. And so growing up, I already had this experience of things not exactly being what they seem. You know, it's not necessarily seeing, it's believing, although we did see a lot of very paranormal stuff going on in the house. So it always had been a part of my early childhood. And then my psychic abilities started coming to surface when I was a teenager. But, you know, you got all those hormones and everything kicking in, so the energy really ramps up. Mm-hmm. And that's what started to unlock those properties. But then as you get older, you know, you're supposed to fall into the American dream of, you know, getting married with the white picket fence. And so I shoved that underground, but then it came up again at the turn of the millennium. And that's when I started developing my mediumship. But not too far after that, my wife had me enter the Washington State Ghost Society because, one, it would be therapeutic, and two, because I had this natural interest, obviously, in communicating with spirit. So when I joined the group, I was really more interested in joining it as an investigator and not a medium. I wanted to play around with all of the scientific equipment. And on my very first investigation, I had an amazing, absolutely incredible EVP. I mean, and I think probably everybody who listens to your show knows what an EVP is, right?
Probably, but you may want to repeat it for people. Extra sensory perception? Or no, extra, let me think.
EVP is electronic voice phenomenon.
You took a word out of my mouth.
It's when the spirit will actually speak into the microphone of the recording device. And you can hear it audibly when you listen back to it. You don't necessarily hear it while you're standing there recording, but you do hear it when you listen back. And I had the most amazing EVP that when I got done picking myself up off the floor, I said to myself, wow, Now, here's an opportunity to learn something about the nature of consciousness. That's really where I come from when I do this work, is the nature of consciousness. And so what I did is I developed a list of 22 questions that I started asking at every single location that we went and investigated to see if I could get an answer in the form of an EVP. And I did. I started getting answers to these questions about, well, you know, what is your life like as a ghost? And so one day, you know, several years passed, and I'm doing this work, and I'm listening to a another radio show, and the radio host is interviewing a scientist who's doing work on mediums. And he asked the scientist, well, why don't those spirits that come through tell us what life is like on the other side? Well, from a scientific standpoint, studying mediums, you would never ask those questions because you wouldn't be able to validate them. However, I was like listening to this going, well, they do. I've got EVPs that show they do. And I'm like, hey, I wonder. I know this would work. So what I did is I went home and I created a list of 52 questions. I went out and I got 14 different volunteer sitters to come in. And once we had established a verifiable link with a friend or loved one in spirit, I had my sitter ask each one of those 52 questions to see what kind of answers would come back. Mm-hmm. And so it took me about a year and a half to do those interviews because I recorded each one of them. I had to transcribe each one of them into a big Excel spreadsheet. And what was really cool was I was capturing EVP. So not only was I getting the information mediumistically, it was coming back, I was getting EVPs throughout the recordings that were able to validate and corroborate what I was picking up on. So it was a very incredible project to work on.
I have to ask you this, Jeffrey. Do you mind if I read some of these questions? Because I've read your book. It's fascinating. Just go over a few.
Oh, no, go for it.
Well, my friends in the audience, Volume 1, the contents. Question 1 is the dying process. What was it like to die? Number 2, the tunnel. Did you enter a tunnel of light or did you remain behind? Spiritual guides. Once you experienced that, did you meet a spiritual teacher, guide, relative, or religious figure? Question 4, the life review. Was there a life review? How would you describe it? Question 5, the transition place. Was there a transition place holding or that would bring you to a place where you now call home? Question 6, some of these I'm skipping, but it's summarizing the questions. Any other comments? Question 7, your identity. Were there things that you gained? Continuation of form. Question 8, do you have a new kind of body or are you without form? If you have a new body, what is the body like in the afterlife? Question 10, health issues. Do you have any kind of body health issues? Question 11, what's the coffee like? No, that's my mistake. No, aging and appearance. I have to tell you, I've been in touch with the other side about 20 years, and I did talk to my dad years ago. And the one thing he told me, he passed on in 1999, the one thing he told me, Jeffrey, he missed coffee. So I know they don't have coffee over there, but maybe they have something close to it. I'm not sure. He told me he missed McDonald's coffee because it was Seattle's best. It was good coffee. Question 12, wisdom questions. Question 13, communication, physical interaction, perception of stress. Do spirits get stressed out over there? What is time like on the other side? Question 17, fascinating questions about past lives. What have you been as a person in a past life? Choosing families. Question 18, how are soulmates and families chosen? What are the different levels of spirituality? Question 20, advancement. How do you advance? Question 21, striving for higher consciousness. Question 23, the nature of evil. What is evil? Is an illusion or reality? But, I mean, these are topics which we could probably spend the next 20 or 24 hours on and never finish them completely. But
and the questions in Volume 2 will go much, much deeper.
Oh, no. Well, we'll have to have you back again after your book comes out. One thing I want to say, too, and I know I urge you all out there in the audience, please get a copy of Jeffrey's book. It's absolutely fascinating. All the questions you've ever wanted to ask about the death and dying process are answered in Jeffrey's excellent work. I know after my parents passed on, I had a lot of questions regarding the experience, what happens after that. Fortunately, I had my foster mother beginning in 1994 taught me, she was a master psychic, and she taught me how to contact the other side. So I've been fortunate in being able to contact my parents on a regular basis for the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And they're with me right now, and it's perfectly normal for me to talk to them. I do it all the time. I also speak with my my aunts and uncles. I've got also two children on the other side waiting to be born. And but there's a whole angelic hierarchy out there, and that can definitely help you. But Jeffrey, of all these, I mean, I'm sure we could talk for a long time on all these different topics. Which one would you like to talk about first? I mean, I know it covered a lot of different areas.
Oh boy, that's a tough question because there's so many different facets that are very, very interesting, very, very fascinating. I mean, there's numerous things in Volume 1 and Volume 2 that really kind of blew my mind. Well, but I think the one that mm-hmm. I think the questions that really grab a lot of people's interest from Volume 1 inevitably end up being the one about reincarnation.
Okay.
Because when we look at leaving the Earth plane, we're leaving the space-time continuum. So what does that mean? What does that do for us? And what that inevitably brings to the forefront is what quantum physicists have been telling us here lately in the last 20, 25, 30, 40 years, is that time is not linear. It's really simultaneous. So you can go backwards and forward. And so when you step out of that framework into the realm of spirit, time takes on that sense of simultaneous nature. And so when it comes to the question of reincarnation, How do you look at that? How do you view that? Mm-hmm. And the question went on to ask, okay, if time is simultaneous, can you see these other versions of what you would call you, and can you converse with them? And it's very fascinating because some of the spirits that came through said, yes, I can see them, and I'm willing to talk to them. And if you wanted to know how close family could be, get to know your simultaneous selves. But conversely, there were some spirits that were like, yes, I could see them, but no, I don't want anything to do with them. You know, and it was kind of like they were blaming some of the circumstances of their earthly life on these other portions of themselves. And it is a very fascinating topic, and it's one that kind of leaves your mind going, huh, this is bizarre.
But it's also fascinating, too, because you're right. Quantum physics scientists or physicists have said that the possibility exists for parallel universes depending upon our choices. We make choices every day. I mean, instead of driving, for example, I guess I could have hitchhiked to the studio, conceivably,
yeah.
and I would have probably not been here right now. So it would have been on a different
yeah.
time track. I could have maybe become, when I was a kid, I love to collect insects, and maybe I would have become an entomologist instead of a radio talk show
yeah.
host, which is what I'm doing
yeah.
now.
All that's dealing with probabilities, but when it comes to time, it's like, well, if all time is simultaneous, you know, how do we wrap our heads around that?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, I think the best example would be to imagine yourself being an astronaut mm-hmm. orbiting the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because planet Earth, I think, has something like 40 different time zones on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we know here in the U.S. right now, it's like 3:20 here on the Pacific coast, which means it's going to be something like 7:20 over on the East Coast.
And we have,
however,
yep.
if you're that astronaut out in space, mm-hmm. it's happening all at once.
Oh, wow. Interesting. We have, by the way, people listening in Switzerland right now to the program, and it's 12, almost 12:20 after in the morning,
yeah.
tomorrow morning right now.
So there's a perfect example, or at least the perfect analogy of simultaneous time.
Hmm. Fascinating. Fascinating. The life review, now I'm familiar with that because, I'll let you tell my audience, though. The life review, is it a situation where you review all your thoughts, deeds, and actions for your entire life to see what you could have done better or that perhaps things you did well? Is that the kind of, do the spirits you've spoken with?
Yeah, but it goes much deeper than that. Because the reason I asked that question was because we hear about the life review through near-death experience report.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of like, well, okay, it makes sense that we do have that once we finally transition and know we're not coming back. But I really wanted to find out, is this truly the case? And Yes, it is. But it went deeper than just reviewing our choices. It went into this image and feeling of being able to feel the sensations that resulted in the people that you dealt with in your relationships. For instance, if you ended up making somebody very, very angry and upset, in the life review, you got to see, you got to feel exactly what that person felt regarding the way you had treated them. And also conversely, if you made somebody feel absolutely beautiful and joyful, you got to feel that too. And so it was this wonderful portrait of demonstrating how everything really is connected and is one, to the point that you got to feel the inner emotions and reactions that other people had to you. And what an amazing lesson to learn, or a way to learn your lesson, to be able to have that reflected back to you. Sometimes painful, but also sometimes joyful.
Under the guidance of my foster mother, who was a master psychic, she gave me life reviews on a daily basis when she was alive from 1994 to 2012. So I was able to experience that from other people. And as a result, my spirit guides tell me I've advanced 13 lifetimes.
Empathy. Well, what's the phrase? I think the phrase is the price of sensitivity is sensitivity.
Mm-hmm. It is. That's true. Well, Jeffrey, when you walk into a supermarket or a store or walking down the street, you must get overloaded sometimes.
No, actually, I don't. I'm one of the lucky ones in that I can turn it off.
Oh, okay.
And so only very, very – the only place that really bombards me with stuff like that are hospitals and assisted living places like that. My wife has, her mom is in assisted living. And whenever we go to visit, I do feel these people walking by me that you don't see. And hospitals are, I hate going to hospitals because of all that comes at me. But for more often than not, though, I can turn it off and just put my awareness elsewhere. And sometimes I've discovered it's not always easy for me to turn it on either, because I can really bury it.
Oh, well. I have a friend, a dear friend of mine, and she does my web design, and she's an empath, and she picks up people's emotions. And sometimes I know she'll go into a store and pick up all kinds of stuff, and I'm kind of oblivious to it, but it's easy for people like that to get overloaded. But you're lucky, Jeffrey, that you don't get overloaded. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, I have a tutor in the UK who refers to people who have that as a leaky tap.
A leaky tap? Oh, no. Oh, well, that's funny. That's funny. Well, I have to ask you, after let's say a person, and I'm sure this is my listeners would find this interesting, Jeffrey. Let's say a person has just died, and then do they go, is there a light that envelops them, or do they find a light? Do they find a tunnel of light that they go into that tunnel, and then they end up on the other side and are greeted by relatives and their spirit guides and then go through a life review? Is that basically how it usually the scenario that happens?
That's generally the idea. However, everybody is unique, and sometimes a person's unique qualities will give them unique experiences. For instance, in one of the interviews, it was the 13th interview. It was the spirit mother of my sitter that was coming through. And during the opening interview process, somewhere in here, her mother was telling me that she was the slowest person on the freeway. And my sitter was like, yes, she was. She could not handle speed. And so when it came to this question about the tunnel and the light, she told me that she didn't get the tunnel and the light. She had a mist that came and wrapped around her, because if you'll recall from some of the near-death experience literature, when people go down that tunnel, it's like this being, they're being sucked down this tunnel and they're going very, very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like she didn't get that experience because somehow or other, and I find this very fascinating, whoever designed the entrance into that next world knew that she would probably have a very hard time going down that tunnel. It probably frightened her dearly. And so they didn't give her that experience. There were other people who, when passing, It sometimes depended on their frame of mind and belief system, because in Volume 2, there's a chapter on why do some people experience a hell-like experience as soon as they pass. And the answers that were coming back from that were, well, it mostly dealt with their psychology, things that they were brought up with, if they didn't feel they were worthy, if they bought into that sort of negative stigmatism upon themselves. When they passed, there was sort of an innate expectation of kind of going the other way. And, well, thoughts become almost instantaneously realized when you leave the slow nature of the molecular portion of the Earth. So it did create a hellish experience right away for some of those people. But, again, that's all illusion. And there are spirit guides, angels, and that sort of thing to help move those people out. But generally, when one passes, and certainly if they're having deathbed visions ahead of time, they are really prepared to have the moment of exiting the body, going down the tunnel, or having a light mist envelop them to open them up into the next phase, which tends to be the life review as soon as they go down the tunnel or that mist evaporates.
My foster mother always used to tell me that thoughts are things in the fifth dimension. So you always have to keep your mind focused in on positive things if possible, because they can materialize if you're not careful.
Yeah.
But I think that's good in everyday life too, because before something manifests in the third dimension, you always think of it in the fifth dimension first. And the fifth dimension
Go ahead. And as you know, our vibration here is slow, and that's why it takes a little time for things to manifest here.
Sure.
Not so over there.
Right. They call it what did the spirit guides tell me? They call it the buffer of time. So that if you visualize, for example, a gold coin appearing on a street, it does take some time. You may wait there a couple of years before it visualizes in the third dimension. My friend Scott, who was on the first hour, he talked about benevolent ETs, and he wanted me to ask you a question, Jeffrey. Have you been aware of, in your communications with the other side, of any benevolent human friends from other worlds in touching base or talking to people who passed on and giving them uplifting, giving them like spiritual uplifting on the other side once they pass over?
I'd have to say no, I haven't experienced that. However, that's because when I approach mediumship, I'm really connecting with a friend or loved one of a sitter who's in front of me. So it's really focused on, you know, their kin and their relatives that they're connected with. However, in Volume 2, that comes out on May 14th, there's several questions about the nature of the environment over there. And one of the answers that came back was, yes, there are environments here for those entities that you would consider extraterrestrial. So there is an acknowledgement from those on the other side of other life on other worlds and how they too will, you know, move into this spiritual dimension of their own, and also have environments and things that correspond to the life that they have, or had rather, on these other planets that they were on.
Oh, interesting. Well, I guess I should have asked Scott's question a little bit differently, in the sense that have you run into any spirits on the other side from other worlds who are currently involved in uplifting people?
Like I said, no, I haven't. But my focus has always been on trying to connect with a friend or relative for the person sitting in front of me. And unless they have a friend or relative that is on another planet, that hasn't happened for me yet.
All right. Good. Reaching the bottom of the hour, and I just wanted to give a station identification. You're listening to Out of This World with your host, Ted Marr. We're broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington. For those who'd like to call in and talk to Jeffrey, is it okay if people called in, Jeffrey, and asked you questions, if they had any, about the other site?
Sure.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Okay, great. Our studio line here is area code 425-373-5527, or toll-free within Western Washington is 1-888-298-5569. And also, too, I know I'm going to get this question later, Jeffrey. But if people wanted to get a copy of your book, can they get it at Amazon? Or I know your website's linked up to our website. Our website is www.outofthisworld1150.com. And if you go scroll down to the to today, you'll see Jeffrey Mark's name. You click on, you go right to his website. But is that the best way to get a copy of your book, or what's the best way?
No, it is on Amazon. It's on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. So those are the two best ways to get the book.
Okay. I wanted to ask, say this too, and ask you this question, Jeffrey. For those who've lost a loved one, like a parent or a brother or sister, or even a pet, they don't leave you, do they? They stay right with you. They're still there with you, giving you the love and the guidance that people want. Is that true? A true statement?
I would say yes. I mean, the spirit world is all around us. Mm-hmm. We're occupying the same space. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is whether or not they're giving you their full attention. Because when they pass, I mean, they still have a life to live of their own. So they may not always be paying attention to you. I do believe, though, those first, I really can't give an amount of time because I don't know, but I would say probably at least for the first few months, maybe even a year, they're probably checking in, hanging out more than what they would, you know, the longer they're over there, because, you know, they've got a life to live over there and things to do. But definitely around the freshness of the transition, I do believe that they're probably hanging around quite a bit, because, you know, they're gonna want to be able to try to get a message through to say, I'm here, I'm okay, I've survived. And some of them want to hang around because they want to make sure that their family members they left behind are okay, that they are going to move past it and things like that. So, I mean, it's a natural human emotional attachment that you can't just take it off like a pair of clothes because you sure. moved into a new dimension. You still have, I mean, those bonds exist. They don't go away.
Sure, right. Well, for people who have lost a loved one, or even a pet for that matter, can you put them in touch with them, with people, spirits on the other side?
I always make an attempt. I can make no guarantees. I can never say who or what is going to come through. Mm-hmm. But that's why I do the work, though, because when it does work and when it does happen, it is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Pets, I haven't done a whole lot of, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
There I know of other psychics and everything that are great animal and pet communicators. Mm-hmm. So definitely.
Well, as a spirit once told me, the pets are actually the part of the circle of love around all of us. And I myself have a cat, and I love animals. They're great friends. I look at them as wonderful part of that circle
they're
of love.
They're family.
Yeah, absolutely. 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 By the way, what are your cat's names, by the way?
Jasper and Cosmo.
Huh, interesting. Interesting.
Jasper's obviously the big, fat, orange tabby.
Mm-hmm. And Cosmos is from another, is out of this world, or?
Cosmo, the reason I call him Cosmo is he's a black and white, like, tuxedo cat, but he mm-hmm. has little dots of white flecks in his fur mm-hmm. that look like stars.
Oh,
so,
how funny. Well, my cat's name is Fluffy, Sir Fluffy, to be formal, and he has, he's got long, furry, fluffy hair. It's orange. And for my listeners, I wanted to tell you, I'm going to ask Sonia Fitzpatrick back on my program in June or July. She's an animal communicator. Fantastic. She was on my show here a couple of months ago, and it was just, I could tell I had all kinds of people calling in, asking about their pets who passed on, but it was a lot of fun and a lot of love out there too. Jeffrey, I wanted to ask you, now, when you're on the other side talking to these spirits, they have a record. They can access their Akashic record. Is that right? And see what they've done in the past and what they plan to do for the future. Is that fairly standard for spirits?
Well, what they've done in their past in terms of their own unique self, they have already in their memory bank. But yes, I mean, if they do not want to deal directly with the simultaneous reincarnational self, mm-hmm. because, you know, there could be an immense amount of emotional stuff that comes up with that, they can at least the way I saw it, and I don't know if this is symbolic or literal, is a book that details, you know, the past and the future. And man, the way that gets weird when you try to imagine the future stuff. But at least when it comes to the past stuff, the way I saw it, they did open this book, and you can go back and look at what these other selves did in these other times, which, again, are bizarrely and oddly enough simultaneous. And it's always linear when you move into the Earth framework.
Huh, interesting. What about different planes on the other side? I assume that there's different higher planes.
Well, you know, that was an interesting question too, because I'd heard for many years you kind of get conflicting stories. There's 7 planes, there's 22, whatever, and so I was kind of like, well, can you give me an idea about this? And I never really got a definitive answer in terms of a number. But what they kept telling me was, well, a couple different things. If you're looking at planes in terms of ascension, they were telling me, well, stop looking at it like a ladder. Look at it more like a balloon, because the nature of life and experience is to become to fill that balloon up and expand. And the thing about looking at levels, it kind of gives this idea of, well, if you're a level up over somebody, then that person below you, well, they must have something wrong, or they're bad, or they're worse off, or something like that. And that's really not the case. Every point in growth is valuable, has value, and has positivity. So they were telling me to make it more like a balloon and not a ladder. The other thing they were telling me was that, I don't know if this is really levels per se, but the nature of experience on the other side, and at least in terms of the environment that you will end up occupying and experiencing, will be directly related to the nature of your energy, which is directly related to the knowledge that you have of what you have acquired in your experience. So let's say somebody who, let's go to the extreme, was a murderer, is not going to be in the same environment as somebody who was like a Mother Teresa or a doctor or a healer. They're not going to be coexisting in the same sphere of environment and energy. So there is some kind of separation that goes on there based on frequency, based on knowledge.
Hmm. Interesting. Scott, my guest from the previous hour, just told me that he says we live on numerous parallel and higher planes simultaneously as a single soul. So we have different dimensions. We're all existing at the same time.
I believe that, yeah.
Fascinating. Well, for those people who would like to contact the other side, would you like to give out your phone number? Or you can certainly go to Jeffrey's website, which is listed on my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And I also do readings for people, too. If you'd like to contact me, just send me an email at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com or call me on my toll-free number at 1-888-879-8339. And one thing, too, I'm sure my listeners would be interested in this question, too, Jeffrey. When you go over to the other side, can you choose your physical form, what you look like, or do you look like what you just passed away? Let's say you had a debilitating disease and you're not feeling the greatest. Can you choose what you look like on the other side?
Yes, and boy, are you so happy when you finally get out of the body if you have a debilitating illness. Okay, whoa. I feel so much better. Yeah, they do choose their appearance, and it's usually correlates to a time that they feel was the best of their life. Mm-hmm. So I do believe that you will find every age group over there, but it's going to be by subjective personal choice of that individual as to how they will appear.
Mm. I was in a car accident in early 1978, and as a result of that accident, I ended up with tinnitus in both my ears. And when I pass over, I know which physical form I'm going to choose. I'm going to choose January 1978 or 77, because that was just before when I have peace and quiet. I've lived with this for so many years; I'm used to it. But it's what Aristotle had tinnitus in his ears too. But I know that that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to choose a body form without the ringing in my ears. So anyway. Here's another interesting question, Jeffrey. There's so many to ask you. When you reincarnate, and you're sitting around, do you sit around at a kind of like a table in a meeting and you talk to your friends and spirit family saying, well, what should I do? What should you do? You figure out what you'd like to learn the next time, or what you'd like to become, or what lessons you'd like to learn? Do you like establish a plan for your next reincarnation? Or,
well, it's a tough question to answer because it makes it sound like you're in linear time and you're getting ready to leave the other side and come back down, and that's really not what's happening. But the way it was described to me is, not only are you sitting around the table, but some, depending on your nature of your relationship with your other simultaneous reincarnational selves, they may be sitting around that table as well. And it's bizarre because with all time being simultaneous, those future selves are already in existence. And to me, I believe what's happening is they're all talking about probabilities, and they're all talking about the nature of how to make certain probabilities materialize energetically, and it goes backwards and forwards through time. I you know, it's so mind-boggling. I'm not sure if we can fully understand it with our three-dimensional brain. But I mean, I have heard exactly what you described. I mean, Michael Newton sort of talks about it in his book, A Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls, and it does take on this perspective of linear time. But if all time is not linear once you step outside the body, how does that come around to deciding? We just did a paranormal investigation down in Hoquiam, late last year. And we were connecting with a spirit who was actually telling us about himself, or this other simultaneous self, shall we say, getting ready to be born again, and telling us the kind of troubles that this other self was going to have in this new life. And how he didn't necessarily envy that particular portion of himself coming back and having to go through what he was going to be going through.
Fascinating.
To me, it's got to be something like having to do with like holograms or something. It's very, very, I think at times, confusing.
Fascinating. Well, this leads into another question, too, is about choosing families and your soulmates. Let's say, for example, you're a young person and you meet the love of your life, and then that person maybe meets an untimely death, dies early, and then now you live your life and you pass on, you go into your life review, and then you're deciding now what to do with your next life. Can you choose to be with that same person that you wanted to maybe marry and have a family before, or what do you think?
I would think if that other person is open for it, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, a relationship is a two-way street. And so if you are planning on wanting to spend another lifetime with somebody else, hey, if they are willing to go along with it, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the whole choosing families thing, looking at it on an energetic sort of level, it seems to me that it has to do with balancing out energies and experiences. So it's kind of like we may leave certain family members in one lifetime with some regrets and some shame or whatever, and we try to make that up in another simultaneous existence. So it's kind of like this amazing balancing act that's going on energetically between souls.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating, Jeffrey. Have they told you what the purpose of life is from your friends on the other side?
They tell me that the purpose of life is to express and experience all the potentials available to you, which is infinite.
Fascinating. But it's also spiritual growth, I assume. But it's like a school. I've heard that the existence in this dimension is like a school where you learn lessons and hopefully advance from those lessons spiritually.
Yes, but it's actually more than a school, because let's face it, if we were in school 24/7, it would drive us mad. We have to have opportunities. Yes. Well, it's multidimensional. There's lots of different things going on. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're going to get lessons and things like that, but you also have almost an innate responsibility to express the dynamic, multidimensional, eternal nature of your spirit and your soul. Mm. So... It's part and parting process, and I think is really the heart of why we come into existence in the first place, to be able to experience and express and learn naturally just what we are capable of being and just who and what we are. Because if we are truly in some way a reflection of God or the divine source or the creator of the universe, if we are truly some sort of reflection of that, we need to have these avenues to experience that and be able to express it.
I have to ask you a question. First, I'd like to preface it with just a very, very brief story. I was in Egypt about 15 years ago, and I visited the pyramids, at the hieroglyphs, all these different statues in Luxor on the Nile. And there they had there was one in particular that caught my eye, and it stated that the ancient Egyptian doctors 5,000 years ago said that any disease is a dis-ease. In other words, it has a spiritual cause. And in your investigations with and communication with spirits from the other side, Jeffrey, have they told you, for example, the spiritual reasons of why a person gets, for example, a debilitating disease like cancer or an accident happens? Are there did they talk about spiritual reasons for different health problems or health issues?
Well, they did specify that pretty much exactly what you just said, in the sense that any illness or anything like that is dis-ease. And it starts within the individual on an energetic level. They didn't get down into the nitty-gritty in terms of, like, what type of emotion or what type of thinking creates cancer, only that it is something that it doesn't attack you out of the blue, and it's not some invading particle. No, it's a result of an expression of energy that the consciousness is expressing that creates it.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. And that was one of the big takeaways from Volume 1 was this constant message from them about how we do have choices and our thoughts do matter, and that they do create the nature of our lives and the nature of our experiences all the way down to that cellular level, even though we sometimes like to rally against that and say that's hocus pocus or we don't want to buy into that, because we've been taught to feel like we're being attacked against by foreign agents, when really what they're telling us is it's not really foreign at all. It's not any more foreign than the negative thoughts that you harbor within yourself that create them to begin with.
Well, I want this radio program to be a tool for the betterment of humanity, and that's why it's one of its purposes is to raise consciousness in every way I can, in a loving and benevolent way. And, boy, you've given such a gift to the world, Jeffrey, with your research.
Thank you.
You really have. This is just an amazing work. The other thing I'm sure my listeners are probably asking themselves this too. Well, let's say Jeffrey, you went over to Europe and you were in the middle of Italy, and you were doing a reading for someone, and you just contacted someone's parents who just passed over, and they all speak Italian. You don't speak a word of Italian, but as an English speaker, can you understand what the spirits are saying, or is language only strictly a third dimensional barrier, if you will, a construct of the third dimension and not necessarily in the fifth?
I would say language is really just a third dimensional barrier because, and you know this, mm-hmm. Information that comes through psychically doesn't necessarily come through in words or language. It comes through as images, pictures, feelings, and other things. When I went to Arthur Findlay College last year, one of the weeks that I was there was also Japanese week.
Oh.
And so they did a couple mediumship demonstrations with all of us, including all these Japanese students. And so a couple of the tutors who were up there bringing through people's loved ones were connecting with these Japanese students who didn't know a lick of English. They had to have a translator up there translating the information that was coming through from spirit. And it worked beautifully. In a couple of cases, some of the tutors did get the Japanese names of the people that were coming through. But, yeah, spirit communication is definitely not hindered by language.
By the way, I have to tell you, your guides are coming to me through me right now, and they're very proud of your work, Jeffrey. They said you're going to live a long and happy life. So I just want to let you know that.
Oh, thank you.
Your cats will be around a long time, too, so you better get them that fish tonight that they want.
Well, we hope, because it pets are such an amazing bond.
Oh yeah,
and it's always not to say that any of the other pets that we've had were not as important or loving or lovable, but our two boys are just like, we don't know what we're going to do with ourselves when that time comes, because they're just so precious to us.
They're sometimes they're the perfect part of the life, actually.
So
to speak.
Well, my wife and I made deliberate choice not to have children when we got married.
You've got cats. You've got children.
So we've got
absolutely.
Cats.
Absolutely. I'm kind of biased to cats. I like dogs, too. They're all part of the circle of love around us.
Yeah.
What have the spirits talked about evil? Have they said given any interesting information about evil, the causes of it, or demons, or that kind of thing?
Okay. Well, what they have told me about the nature of evil is that it's really like ignorant little children. Evil is more or less ignorance. And not having knowledge. The image that always comes to me was, I forget what interview this was, but the spirit that was coming through was showing me little children rolling around on a playground, biting and tugging at each other. Mm-hmm. And it was just because they didn't have the knowledge and experience and wisdom to know that all things are connected, it's all about love. Instead, they've gone into their own selfish, narcissistic ways, and that creates this level of ignorance where they don't know the ramifications of their energy and their actions. And that, to me, was what they described as evil being. So there's evil out there, but it's really just ignorance and wisdom. And the good news is they will figure it out. They will learn it. We all actually have those portions of ourselves that we would probably call evil. I mean, I think it was the Spirit of Diane in Session 14 who said, look, whether you like it or not, each one of us most likely has a probable simultaneous reincarnational self who murdered somebody. Mm-hmm. But the thing is it's like anything, like any child, you do grow up, you do gain wisdom, you do forgive yourself, and life goes on. Mm-hmm. And so there's that. When it comes to the demon question, I've been doing paranormal investigations for years, and I have yet to find anything that makes me believe that there is a demon as described in Christian ideology. That's not to say there are not angry spirits or that there are not evil spirits that are willing to do things that are quite heinous, but I have yet to encounter anything that has not materialized on this earth that we would classify as a demon. Mm-hmm. But however, because there are spirits who don't necessarily know the ramification of their energies or the oneness of all things, if you have a fear or a belief in that, there are some spirits that are more than willing to play the game, and they will make themselves appear that way and do things that we, on our level of belief, would characterize as being a part and parcel of demonic activity.
In the
house I lived in when I was three, if you were to have been brought up on a religious framework, one could easily say it was haunted by the devil.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. It's just an angry man.
I have to ask you this question, short comment, Jeffrey, and that's that how many times have you heard people say, oh, he's a great guy as long as he's not drinking. As soon as he starts drinking, he becomes a different person completely.
And yes.
And from what my foster mother told me, who was a master psychic, she said that drinking excessive, abusing drugs or alcohol or both, what it does is it creates cracks in your aura so that evil entities can come in and basically take over your body and soul and make you do things that are out of character. And
absolutely, I would agree with that. There's a reason why bars and taverns are so haunted or well known to have spirit activity. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So they vicariously live there to feed off the energy of people drinking or whatever, taking drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's lots of energy there. I mean, there's lots and lots of it. And remember, that whole philosophy of like attract like.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is probably a very horrible generalization to make. Mm-hmm. But if there's a lot of people hanging out in bars and they're trying to drink away their sorrows or that sort of thing,
right,
that's going to attract a certain type of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, need I say more? I mean,
sure.
they definitely will take advantage of the energy if it's there.
There was one important thing that my foster mother told me years ago. She said, "Ted, if you want to contact the other side, that's great, but you've got to stay away or minimize your intake of alcohol and certainly drugs, because if you don't, it can interfere and you can't get the connections. You can't get the messages from the good spirits as you could otherwise.
Well, certainly if it's putting your energy in a low state or a depressed state or whatever that is, like attracts like.
Sure, sure. Well, I know that eventually when I pass over, I'm probably going to be headed to the nearest Starbucks to vicariously enjoy a cup of coffee with somebody there. So don't let me bother anyone. I don't know when that's going to be, but so, anyway, maybe I'll go fishing. Yeah, I'll probably join my dad. We'll go out and catch a nice big salmon. Or I'll hang around a boat and watch them pulling the fish. And I'll get a cup of coffee and catch some fish. I have to ask you too. What's the most interesting session you've had contacting a spirit? Like, have they? I know that's probably a wide open question, but we've got a couple minutes left, and I wanted to give you the floor, and maybe perhaps you could share some interesting stories with my listeners about maybe what's happened.
Honestly, the most interesting sessions have been these interviews, because when I'll just go with the very first session, because I had never done this type of reading before. You know, every reading has always been the standard reading where you link up and you bring through the evidence and you give a message and you close it up. Well, here I am going, okay, let's open it up and let's ask these people 52 questions about life on the other side and hope they provide an answer. And when I was done with that first session, I probably sat on the floor completely dumbfounded for about 2 hours. Because the session itself, I didn't know if I could energetically pull it off, because it ended up going 3 hours. And even when they were done answering the questions, I still ended up giving essentially a full reading to my sitter, which was another 20, 25 minutes. And then I got listening back to the audio, and I'm typing in these questions. And when my sitter asked that question about reincarnation, at the time that we were doing the session, I heard in my head, oh my God, that's a really cool question. And so I mentioned that to my sitter. Well, when I was listening to the audio, before I said that, the spirit's voice came through loud and clear, like another person in the room, saying, oh my God, that is such a cool question. And I was like, oh me. I had my sitter come back and listen to that piece of audio, and her eyes just got as large as saucers, because it was like, oh my God, that's him. And that was absolutely amazing. So to me, the most incredible sittings have got to be what came through these.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I want to tell, we'll be wrapping up here in a couple minutes, but I want to tell my listeners that I also have had that same kind of experience where I've had my dad and my brother and our other relatives come in on the telephone line to give me messages.
And yeah.
And it's been really cool. And sometimes I've been talking to my niece, Nikki, and it's like there's a whole room of people. And I said to Nikki, Nikki, do you have the TV on? And she'd say, no. Is there somebody else in the room? No, there's nobody around me. And the whole thing is it's tied into the spirit world. There's a whole bunch of spirits there, and they're all. It's like they're having a big party or big gathering, and it's nice. It's nice to know they're there. We've got about a minute and a half, Jeffrey. Are there any parting words you'd like to give my listeners? And I want you to tell them about your meditation seminar too that you start in September for people.
Actually, it's not meditation. It is. It's about mediumship.
Oh, mediumship. I'm sorry.
It's about developing mediumship. I call it Mediumship 101. And originally, it's been a 7-month class, but I think I need to extend it to 8 because there's just so much to it.
Sure.
And that's going to start up in September, and that'll be in Everett at Vision Quest.
Wonderful.
And so I am looking for other locations down south, because I realize not everybody can make it up north here.
Sure.
And so I am looking at finding places down south where I can also teach this, because it is something that a lot of people are interested in learning.
Wonderful. Well, for more information about Jeffrey's wonderful works, and Jeffrey, thank you so much for coming on today. I'd love to have you back again in a couple of months.
Sure, absolutely. I'll send you a copy of the new book when I finally get a copy.
Okay, great. Well, hold on, Jeffrey. I want to say a few parting words. My friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. I've really enjoyed all of you listening in to another edition of Out of This World. Next week, we'll be having Joe Trolley back from New York. I didn't give Joe enough time last week, so I talked to him, and I wanted to have him back about his visions for the future. He's one of the best psychics on the East Coast. He's out of New York City, and Scott will be again on with this a week from today as well. So I hope you have a wonderful day. And again, remember, Scott and I will be live at the East West Bookstore at 6500 Roosevelt tonight, between 7:30 to 9. So I hope you have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you tonight, hopefully, and hear you next week. Bye-bye.